go to thecognitiverampage.com. Feel free to contribute, donate, keep fueling the change, whatever it is that you guys can do to help continue to allow this to happen. None of this would happen without you and your love and your support and, of course, your contributions. Love you.
Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. My book, The Cognitive Rampage, A Scientific Approach to Self-Discovery, Change, and Life Optimization, is now available on Amazon. What I do in the book is I fuse the latest research from the cognitive, behavioral, social, environmental, and biological sciences. It's not just motivational fluff and wordplay. Now, I do talk about my own story, so there's some kind of inspiration in there, but I'm not just spinning words and hyping you up with motivational fluff. Whether you need a life change, simply enjoy self-exploration and optimization, want to discover new hidden passions, or reduce the life-altering effects of toil, anxiety, depression, all of those issues, this book is for you. This book is not a cookie-cutter method of steps to follow. You'll customize the scientific framework with your own personal beliefs to build your authentic change. That way you assimilate it faster and quicker. It's not just copying my beliefs and telling you step one, step two. These will come from your beliefs as how you extend and build the foundation upon this framework. You'll use this framework throughout your whole life, through every change, and through every age. These are not empty words of motivational spin. This book is an experience. The Cognitive Rampage is based in science and is built from your beliefs. It's a path to help you unleash your desired change. You can apply this method on your own with no harmful side effects. You can simply go to Amazon.com, search The Cognitive Rampage, and you'll find the second edition there, as well as the Kindle version. The audiobook is going to be released sometime in June. Sometime in June, I will have the audiobook of the second edition available as well. Now, you can also mental train at cognitiverampage.com. You can mental train with me one-on-one, right? It's your own personal cognitive rampage. I do four types, really. I do mental training where I'm practicing with you in the present and I'm teaching you psychological tools and strategies to apply in your life in the present moment, in the now, right? We're not going to run through your childhood or cultivate or talk about the traumas that have impacted you over time. The idea is to handle in the present with tools and strategies that are effective and proven by science that you can do with yourself. Now, that's the first part of mental training. The second part that I do is I do minimalist training. I'm a minimalist. I live that lifestyle. And a lot of people, well, they want to, but they're not sure. What I help you do is I coach you through what to expect, down to what to get, and what you'll go through, even where to start. So we do minimalist training as well. And the third type of training I do is book and podcast training, meaning help you write the book, tell you what's included, what to expect, what you got to go through, some tricks of the trade that I learned publishing my two books, as well as if you have a podcast, if you're just starting out with a podcast and you want to do well on social media, right? You want to get the rankings, you want to learn more about it, how to do it, down to the gear that you need, what you should expect, and again, some tricks from the trade that I've learned through the Cognitive Rampage podcast, I'm more than happy to share with you. And that leads to my last bit of training, which is social media. I teach you what you need, how to get it started, and show you how to run it yourself, all right? So mental training is available. That's at adamlowry.com as well. My guest today on the podcast is Dr. Mark Circus, a acupuncturist, one of the first ones, actually, in the United States, who's actually now in Brazil, but a doctor of oriental and pastoral medicine, a prolific writer and author of some astounding medical and health-related books. See, I start to read the openings, and frankly, Dr. Circus, we started talking before the podcast came on, and I wanted to just speak directly to you, if you would, because you do a lot of things. You've written tons of books in health, holistic health, I should say, which is the big attraction to why I wanted to talk. And you put out a lot of videos, whether it's on cancer, magnesium, and a lot of things. But before I get into that, if you would, where do you come from? What was your story like in the path that walked you all the way to, I think you're in now Brazil, right? Practicing medicine as well, doing a lot of things online. But what's the story that brought you all the way there?
So long story. Basically, my story starts at the University of the Trees about 35 years ago in Boulder Creek, California, with Christopher Hills. He was the guy who brought spirulina to the world and the process called creative conflict. He kind of saved my soul and gave me a mission and purpose in life. And so I learned a lot about communication psychology and color psychology from him. And I went to acupuncture school. And after acupuncture, I went to New Hampshire to set up two practices in acupuncture. And the medical board went after me for practicing medicine without a license. And I went to the state senate and I lost the fight and I had to leave the state. And I kind of left acupuncture and kind of went deeply into therapy. And cut my teeth on, is in terms of a therapist with on sexuality, working with women who had been raped or sexually abused as children. And that really had a profound effect on me.
That's a tough area too. Yeah. I'm a mental health counselor myself, and any area that is one of the toughest ones to try to counsel and understand and even be empathetic for. So, man, to dive deep into that, you really get into some dark places in some people's lives.
It was amazing. And as I said, it really shaped my life. I can tell you as it developed many years later, but what I did was I developed a new form of therapy. I called it hypnotrance therapy. And I would put the woman into a trance, but I would close my eyes and listen to myself and go into a trance with the woman. So instead of being like a hypnotist and being controlling, I would just surrender, open my heart, imagination, and tune into the client. And what would happen was I would just tune them, put them into a trance and tell them to go down into their heart, and they'd go into their heart and go right back to the trauma. So we would be in trance together and they would be reliving the trauma and I would be listening and seeing and talking to them and be holding their hand kind of virtually and be with them. And we went on some incredible journeys. And bottom line, I was married for the third time at that point in my life. And we got separated. And after about 6 months, my ex-wife came over and we made love. And like the next morning I woke up, my heart was bleeding. And I just said to God, I prayed with all my heart for a new life. And 5 hours later, I got it. I went over to a friend's house and I wasn't there 30 seconds. And in walked a woman like a tornado screaming about Brazil. And my skin just goosebumped. And I said, oh, shit, God is putting his finger on the map, pointing where my new life is. I sold everything and went. And here it is 26 years later. I've been in Brazil. I came down here with nothing. And now I have the sanctuary, which I've been building for 11 years. And it's just, and it's been my basic goal is to create heaven on earth. And I did.
Well, it sounds like what a journey to just pack up and take off down to another country, something you don't know, to leave all behind that you know. That's a brave journey to take, and continuing to research and study, you know, along the way, right? You didn't let, say, them stopping you in there first. Now, what was the reason? Why would they stop it or call it medicine? It's acupuncture. I mean, it's all legal and stuff.
Well, it was the very beginning of acupuncture in the United States. In New Hampshire, there was no law for acupuncture. And actually, the certification didn't even exist when I went. I got certified while I was in New Hampshire, nationally certified. But on the medical board's books was acupuncture was the practice of medicine. So they got me. Well, they actually didn't get me, but I had to fight it in the state, the Senate, and I didn't win. I didn't lose. But it means I couldn't practice, so I had to leave.
Yeah, and those laws aren't – they're not the same now, right? They've changed
No, this is a long time ago.
Yeah, so really one of the pioneers, really, bringing what you now see on a mainstream rise, really. You see a lot of holistic uprising and healing, naturopathic medicine, except you're seeing that rise now. And it seems, not so long ago, really, to where it was outlawed, as it was some bad practicing breaking law thing, when it's so mainstream now.
Yes and no. I mean, the mainstream is still very much the mainstream. They ignore as much as possible the realities of the alternative. You know, the things that made me famous, like magnesium, sodium bicarbonate. I'm the only doctor in the world who wrote a book about sodium bicarbonate.
Walk me through some of that, actually. Those books, if you will, and some of those discoveries.
Well, it started, you know, it was actually everything started 14 years ago last week when my third son was born. And we were living in a beach town at the northeast coast of Brazil. And we were worried about vaccines. And he had a natural birth in a hospital that was dedicated only to natural births. And the day I came home with him the next day, I started doing research on vaccines, and in 8 weeks, I wrote and published. It was originally called Cry of the Heart, and now it's published under the name The Terror of Pediatric Medicine. And with that book, I made a name for myself, and became like a comet coming into the solar system of medicine. And what distinguishes me as a person and as a clinician professionally is one of my books is called Heart Health. And one of the big things I learned from Christopher Hills was about my heart. First time somebody said to me I had a big heart, I just turned around and looked behind me and tried to see what they were talking about, because I was such a head person. I was so much in my head. So, and almost everybody is today, thinking, very conceptual ideas, concepts. I was just stuck there. And here I went to the University of the Trees, where they were doing this process called creative conflict, trying to get into the heart. And in the end, it took me maybe 2 decades, I threw down my head and my heart took over. One of the characteristics of that is I'm very slow thinking. I don't think. My mind is very still and very relaxed. I'm not saying I don't get stressed out, but my thought flow is very slow. So when I do think something, or when I write by heart. There's enough space in my head. And going back to the work I did with sexuality, in this book, Heart Health, one of my contributions to the spiritual world or religious world or whatever, is I define the heart as the vulnerability of being, which is what I learned from Christopher. And everybody's hiding their vulnerability. They don't want to show vulnerability because we all think vulnerability is our weakness. Actually, it's our greatest strength. And the strongest person in the world is the most vulnerable, because they're not afraid to be seen. They're not afraid to suffer. They just totally open. Their heart is open. And then I define sex.
I love it. I couldn't agree more. Keep going. Sorry.
And I define sex as our deepest vulnerability. When you attack somebody sexually, you're attacking their deepest vulnerability. And that's why it hurts for a lifetime. That's why it's almost impossible to completely get over that kind of trauma. So this set up my work. In the end, where I am now in my sanctuary, I have totally committed this project to the feminine principle, to listening, to vulnerability, to the three primordial energies of the feminine, which are represented by the goddess and sexuality, Mary, the mother of heaven, and for power in the woman Sekhmet from the Egyptian goddess. And I have two shrines, one to built here, one to the goddess and one to Mary. not that I'm Catholic, but she's been in my life, and that's another long story. So when I started talking about vaccines, I came on incredibly passionately from the heart. I spoke not like a scientist, and I spoke to people in a feeling way. And I could have ended my life then, because vaccines is a huge thing. It's a never-ending battle. It's a hopeless cause, talking about world government, globalization. Well, the first thing that globalized the human race was vaccines. Everybody got to get vaccines. Everybody got to get slaughtered with these hostile chemicals. And sure, mercury is safe to inject into babies. I mean, it was original madness that I really tapped into. And then, just like God was really good to me to send me to Brazil, where I found my life. I have 6 kids, 6 Brazilian kids. 5 of them were my genetics. And I started discovering what to do about vaccine damage. And the first thing that brought me onto the medical map really solidly was my book on magnesium. And it was a book titled Transdermal Magnesium Therapy. It was about using magnesium and putting it on the skin, using this oil that just penetrates in the skin. And that kind of put me on the map. And I could have stayed, and I was thought as the magnesium man, but I didn't stay there. I went to bicarbonate.
Well, before we go too far, can we walk through some of the magnesium, the applications, the research behind it, some facts people don't understand? Feed me some competence on the magnesium.
Well, in terms of research that doctors are just not interested in, they're not interested in research. They're a religion. But in terms of research from scientists and universities around the world, you could drown. It was the easiest book I ever wrote because there's so much research on magnesium, it's ridiculous. So much clinical experience in hospitals and clinics. I mean, endless. And magnesium, when you have any kind of illness, the first thing to start with is magnesium. It's like putting oil in your car. You know, you go up a mountain with no oil in your car, and you don't drive around in life, your body, without enough of that magnesium. And you need that on a daily basis.
Now, so, now, are there typical ways, like a blood test, I know can measure it, but is it accurate at all?
No, not at all. Blood test is the worst. I mean, even with the blood test, they say like 67% of the American population is deficient in magnesium. Except blood test doesn't measure what's in the cells, and the body will steal every little bit of magnesium from the cells just to keep the blood constant. So if you measure the blood, your body, your cells could be stripped of magnesium and your blood will still be reasonably good level. Because the minute your blood level goes down in magnesium, you have a heart attack. That's why, you know, the body can steal it. So almost everybody is magnesium deficient. If you're sick, you know, it's like 99.9%. It's almost impossible today to eat enough magnesium if you're not supplementing with it. And you can drink it, you can take baths in it, you can put it on your skin, you can nebulize it. What I've been doing lately is I made a little thing of, you know, with an eyedropper, 10%, 15% magnesium oil and the rest water, and I drop it, use it as eye drops. Stings a little bit. And
what's the benefit? Just to absorb it faster?
Well, no, I've been having trouble with my eyes.
Oh, okay. So just more like a topical treatment for just about anything.
Everything. Just about everything.
I know it's also a great supplement I've heard. I don't know. Dealing with anxiety sometimes when you take higher doses of magnesium, it keeps you on a lower, more of a relaxed level.
That's an understatement. I'm just publishing an essay. I'm redoing my site. And let me just read. Even a mild deficiency of magnesium can cause increased sensitivity to noise, nervousness, irritability, mental depression, confusion, twitching, which I have in my eye, trembling, which I have in my eye, apprehension, and insomnia. Are you losing me?
A little bit. I got you, though.
A lot of noise.
Well, a little bit of feedback on something. I'm not quite sure. I'm good here.
I can't even hear you.
Oh, that would happen, wouldn't it? Right when we start to get live into the show and it's working all right, it likes to mess up. Now, I'm not sure. I hear myself well. I hear the same feedback. Sounds like we're in a giant windstorm as we're talking about magnesium. I don't know. Well, the fun, just noise. Yeah, I guess so. Can you hear me, though? No? Well, we may have lost you. If you would, maybe you can sign out and use the link to sign back in. Sometimes that'll help. Yeah, definitely coming from your side for sure. Yeah, I want to get deeper into the magnesium. Sometimes it's all right if you just go ahead and sign out of the... Are you there? Oh, we may have brought you back. No, we got rid of the noise, but we don't have you back yet. The joys of recording live and from Brazil, people. So if you're live on air and you're on television, you have to maintain the audience at the same time while you work out technical difficulties, because that's life. The vaccine stuff I definitely want to get further into. The magnesium is amazing, too, because I would dose that every other day sometimes and feel extremely relaxed. So I was given much of an understatement, it would see. It would be, well, we got rid of the sound, but I think you may be working it out. You're still muted there, Mark. Sometimes if you just close out, like leave the room and exit, you may be able to just pull up that email we sent you and sign back in through that link. Just reconnect. If that works, I can blabber on and figure out something to talk about until you sign back in. Well, Grace is rather upset. She would be inside. I cannot hear you. No. And I see you're muted now, and then you would be unmuted. So I would be able to hear you. If not, if you can hear me, probably the best thing to do is to just sign out of the room and use the link we emailed you and sign back into the room. And no worries. I'll be right here waiting for you. I won't go anywhere. We'll sit live with the viewers and hang out, whatever you're doing today. And now, have you taken your magnesium today, people? If you're out there driving around, did you dose some? Apparently you can't overdose on it. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, so. But I have noticed it when I do take magnesium, and I don't take it often. I really don't try to supplement much. I try to do it all naturally. But I even heard from a few people, I think, I can't remember who he had on the show, that said that you can't possibly get it all naturally, that you actually literally had to supplement. But the blood test stuff kind of makes me think, though, because I just had all my workups done, like I write about in the book, too, is, you know, knowing where your biology is so you can make adjustments. But coming to find out, I guess, you know, magnesium, I wonder what other levels don't get picked up.
Can you hear me
now? Oh, welcome back. I am brought us right to magnesium, where we were talking about and some of the importance of magnesium, how deficient we are. I think you even mentioned we can't even possibly ingest it all. In the diet, typically.
You can eat the great diet and still not get enough magnesium, not as a medicine. If you want to use it as a medicine, you need to take a lot. You need to concentrate it. So one of the things I wanted to read is magnesium deficiency or imbalance plays a crucial role in the symptoms of mood disorders. And here comes the noise again.
I think they're on to us, Doc. I think the physicians unions have banded together with some sort of secret conspiracy group to make sure we can't bring the knowledge to them. Oh, joy. Well, yeah, we're still in a wind tunnel hanging out. This is awesome. Well, I can't hear you. You're muted anyway. Well, I was definitely starting to learn some stuff about magnesium and a couple other things. I was talking about the blood work that I had just gotten done. I did it all too. I saw the doctor and I was like, all right, give me the workups. And that still was a sham that I had to go see the doctor to get a permission slip to go to the lab. When just let me go to the lab. Why can't I just walk over to the lab and be like, hey, I'd like to do all these. No, you can't do these testings. You got to go see this doctor person first. They give you a permission slip to go to the lab. Then you get to go to the lab. And I got to be honest, I circled a whole bunch of other stuff that he didn't circle that I wanted to get tested. And happy to say everything came back normal, except I had a little higher count of bilirubins. I had to look up what that was too. I can't hear you, doc. I see you. Nothing. Nothing. When you sign back in, though, that seemed to work pretty well until the conspiracy group caught us. But I appreciate everybody hanging in there, listening to me talk about my blood test and all my other testing. And they used that word stool. I hate that word. They just call it shit. It's not stool. You sit on a stool. Anyway. But definitely get your biology checked. Know where you're at, your levels are. I'm going to talk to him. He had a couple easy tests for a few things too, on the importance of pH. Can you hear me though? You hear me blabbering along like crazy. Kind of giving you away at least all the lead-ins to what I was going to talk to you about. I got nothing. Nothing. Maybe the adjustment in the settings. If you kind of move the, yeah, there's the mute. Now you see the little gear button there to the right? Click on that. You may have to adjust the microphone to be the one that you plugged in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely want to talk to you about the pH stuff and the idea of the your body being acidic, as I'm probably drinking coffee doing the same. But nothing. But the idea of the acidity levels being affected kind of by killing cancer cells, linked to cancer, et cetera, all this other stuff. Some deeper stuff I want to get into. So if you can hang on with us, we'll definitely figure it out. It always comes through. But I will walk into that. The pH levels, the acid links, probably deeper into the vaccines as well. A few questions there. I also want to kind of talk about the difference between talking from your head or your heart and try to understand more the separation there about where one lives from or lives through. Sign back in, and he is right on point. Welcome back.
Okay. Okay.
Perfect.
Oh, you got me.
Oh, we are wonderful. And I was blabbering on about so many things that I wanted to talk to you about, from pH importance to acidic. You heard me, right? I think you could. My mic was working for you, right?
I was a little busy.
No worries, but we were. Can you talk? We were deep into magnesium. We're starting to get further or into it, the good for it. Can you take too much of it? Can you over supplement with it?
If you're in a hospital and you're dying from kidney failure, yes. Mm. But that's it.
All right. So if anything, it may be.
The worst symptom is you drink too much of it and you get diarrhea.
Ah, okay. Well, at least you kind of feel like you're getting cleaned out, right?
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing getting cleaned out, and it's good to bring yourself up to that level because not only clean out, but then you can see your maximum dose of tolerance. Of course, if you put it on your skin, I used to get a magnesium massage almost every day for years. It probably kept me alive. You put this oil all over your body, and then you have somebody rub it in. It was wonderful. I lost my most recent person who was doing that.
Now, are one of the effects or losses, reasons we lose a lot of magnesium, are they linked to the carbohydrates, the whites, the rices, breads, and stuff like that?
Sure. I mean, you know, all the white foods.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I think I was correct on talking about some more damage carbohydrates and whites do. Coming in and out there, Doc. Man, having to carry this show pretty heavy with technology issues, right? Nope. So was it linked to white breads and carbohydrates? Man. Thank God. We at least, you know what we did? We installed, at least on our end, the new internet on this side. So we're getting like 150 uploads or something. Because a couple of those podcasts, if you all were listening to the last two, we were coming in kind of sketchy. So we installed some new internet. It actually goes in next week to get off this other copper wire thing that doesn't work well. But we are stretching all the way to Brazil. Do we have you back there, Doc? Nope. Froze out completely, it looks like. Okay. Well, welcome to Technology World and the Cognitive Rampage Skipcast, where we like to intermittently discuss about things on a deep level and then completely stop and knock you off target. And right when you think you're going to learn something, totally freeze and not be able to tell you anything. But he is back again. This is so fun. I love this part. Proceed, sir. Proceed, sir, as you were discussing the influences of white breads and rices on our magnesium levels.
White salt, white rice is, you know, internationally the worst. But yeah, any of these foods is a poison because we're stripping ourselves of magnesium and fiber, of course.
And you mentioned sugar as well, right? All those are kind of on the same level. They're basically stripping us of magnesium, fiber, and what else?
Yeah. And other minerals. And basically other minerals. So, you know, white foods, not good. So magnesium is just really, really important. And as I say, it's as important as oil is to the car. It's very basic. But doctors, you know, doctors, they're like gas station attendants. You come into the gas station, you need gas, and they put water in your tank. They don't even know that you need gas. This is what doctors are like. They don't know. They don't want to know.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up too, because when I said mainstream earlier in the show there, it wasn't really the mainstream use, because I'm with you about our reactive medicine system that's currently in place and not preventative. And I just meant that we were seeing it more, like it was more you were seeing people talking about it and using it. But you're completely correct, though, that a lot of the mainstream practitioners, if you will, don't really understand the mineral effects, the nutrition effects. And some of the young doctors are being educated in that. But I think even some of the older doctors didn't even have classes in nutrition effects and mineral effects and how you can make amazing changes with small, like even you just said, magnesium changes, et cetera.
You know, we talk about science, we talk about medicine. You know, where does the science start with magnesium? It starts in the emergency room. It starts when a person's having a heart attack and all the pharmaceutical medicines don't work and the person's dying. And then the doctor finally goes, oh, let's give him some magnesium, and bang, comes back. There's only 5-6 decades of clinical experience in the best hospitals of people's lives being saved, because if you inject magnesium, it works instantly, especially on the heart.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that was the supplement to bring you back on a heart attack.
And even though it's not really proven, they, for a long time, they were doing studies in Los Angeles when the ambulance came to the door and a person was having a stroke. They would pump the magnesium in right in the ambulance before you got to the hospital. Because if you pump it in right away, or you throw somebody in a bath filled with, you know, kilos of magnesium, you have a chance of mitigating some of the damage.
That's amazing. That's information everyone should know. That's information that everyone should know, is that impact. Before I dove into the magnesium world and we were trying to connect properly on technology, you started to move into what I think is baking soda, essentially, correct?
Baking soda. That was my second book. A medical book, at least. And there was a woman in France who was very much into candida. And she put me in contact with a doctor, Tullio Simoncini, in Rome. And he's a doctor, an oncologist. Of course, I took his license away, who's been promoting using sodium bicarbonate intravenously to treat cancer.
Holy shit. So straight injecting baking soda to treat cancer. I've seen vitamin C in crazy doses of vitamin C, but I had never heard baking soda.
Yes. Yeah, baking soda. Sodium bicarbonate is the medical name. So he was doing that, and I thought it was interesting. And I was put it on the shelf for a couple of weeks, and then I stumbled across some documents showing about an old Army manual that rated sodium bicarbonate for clearing the kidneys of uranium toxicity. And he went, oh, wow. Boy, this stuff is, it's not a joke. And then I started my research like I did into magnesium, and you find out that even sometimes when they used to give, especially the old forms of chemotherapy, they give sodium bicarbonate while they're giving the chemotherapy. So when they use the mustard gas derivatives, chemos, so they didn't kill the person right in front of the doctors and nurses. You know, they would, the bicarbonate would buffer the poison, which is one of the basic aspects of sodium bicarbonate or baking soda. It cleans and protects and buffers.
Yeah, can you walk through, I don't think a lot of people may be familiar with exactly where chemotherapy came from. That actually was from the mustard gas testing that they found, correct?
Yeah, it comes from the Nazi era. And chemotherapy is, you know, well, they get into all kinds of fancy chemo and they refine it and they keep, and sometimes it does work.
Yeah, it was something, wasn't it linked to where they ran some tests on some people that were exposed to the nuclear explosion and saw that something had worked on them, et cetera, so they were pulling the mustard gas or some other things too, correct? Something like that. I wish my history, if we only had a device that we could look up everything.
Well, we have Google.
That's what I mean. I had a guy, Steve, that used to be in the podcast with me all the time, but I moved across the country for a while on walkabout, but he'd always be pulling stuff up for me when I was talking, but, maybe it's a documentary I heard that from, but, that same link to it. So he's treating the cancer, except it, what, any results, what kind of results is he getting? Or
oh, sure. He had results. The point was that other people had difficulty getting the same results. So what I turned to in my book is using bicarbonate to treat cancer, but using it orally and baths.
That simple, just taking it and bathing in it.
Taking it and bathing in it. You can also nebulize it for lung cancer, getting it into the lungs. You know, anything nebulization is like transdermal, the lungs or the inner skin. So the point was to take enough sodium bicarbonate to get your urinary pH up to 8. Bicarbonate, how does it work? You drink bicarbonate, goes into your stomach, hits the stomach acid, and the stomach acid turns it into carbon dioxide. The evil gas that we should make carbon slaves out of the whole human race, carbon dioxide. The carbon dioxide increase in the stomach goes into the bloodstream in the form of bicarbonate. And in the blood, bicarbonate and carbon dioxide are twin sisters. They're the same two forms of the same thing that go back and forth at the speed of light into each other. What happens when you have more bicarbonate or more CO2? You have more oxygen. Bottom line, you drink sodium bicarbonate, or you put lemon in the glass before you drink it, and the lemon turns it into carbon dioxide. You see the fizz right in the glass. And what happens, you get instantly more oxygen. The more bicarbonate we have, the more alkaline we are, as opposed to acid. Most cancer patients are very acid. The more acid we are, the more violent our cancer is.
Yeah, I've seen some studies with Dr. Rhonda Patrick and some, she does a thing called Found My Fitness, but they put out some research on the links to being acidic and links to cancer, et cetera, and keeping the body at low acidic levels, even reducing coffee, things like that. So you're saying ingesting that is a way to keep yourself, keep the pH higher, essentially, which means you're less acidic.
Yeah, it's not a matter of keeping. It's a matter of it's treating. You know, keeping oneself alkaline, it's a whole process of foods and breathing and stress and many things. But the bicarbonate is an incredible medicine because it instantly gives you access to more oxygen. If you're going to be going a marathon or any athletic event and you drink some bicarbonate before you do the event, you're going to have a little bit more. If you don't get diarrhea from it, taking too much, you're going to have an edge because you're going to have a little more oxygen. The cells can maintain and retain more oxygen if they're alkaline.
And this is the second book covered all of this, correct?
Yeah, sure. It's published now in, I have my own publishing company. We publish ebooks and the magnesium book we printed. And now I have a New York publisher and he's been publishing. He just recently published my book on medical marijuana, which is a very hot topic right now. For me, the Batman and Robin medicine is magnesium and marijuana. The two was very good together for stress.
Now, what are the links in keeping your pH higher by using marijuana? That somewhere?
That's not related.
Okay, all right. Now, I'm just asking questions from things I've heard. Is there any link? What are some medical links that you found and that you're writing about or have wrote about in the book with marijuana?
Well, marijuana also is I call it natural chemotherapy. You know, concentrated marijuana in the oil form, hemp oil, is natural chemotherapy. But my book isn't just for cancer, it's for everything. Marijuana is the best medicine God left us. It's almost good for everything. It's so good we get addicted to it, unfortunately. But
is there any evidence pointing to those that maybe shouldn't, or if it's not for everyone, that maybe people that should stay away from it or something on a biological or physical level maybe?
Not usually, but there are some people who just don't like it.
You know, I forget that they exist, that those people actually are alive, because I'm like, oh yeah, some people just don't like the feeling. So is that the recent book? What's the name of the marijuana book that just came out?
What's it called? I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up.
That's the kind of author I want to be. I want to write so many books to where I'm like, I don't know the name of the new book I just wrote. I've written so many of them. I don't even know.
It has gotten that way with me, marijuana.
And as you're searching for that, I like kind of walking through the timeline of your books because I can see where one thing would lead to the next to lead to the next. What else about I can't even remember, sodium, I'm just calling it baking soda, man, about that book, should we know? Should there be, other than the idea can bring you back to life almost and clear you out and work as a substitute for some chemotherapies, but other than that, was that the focus of it?
Well, no. The original title, the title to the book published in New York, Healing with Medical Marijuana, it concentrates on all the different diseases, but also not so much the recreational aspect, but using it for emotional upset, which would be considered. Using it to change one's consciousness would be recreational. So I really hit it from every side, including eating it as a food. Because when you eat marijuana and you don't cook it, but you eat it, you don't get high, but you get the full effect of the medicine. So there's a lot of things about marijuana. It's just for pain. You know, people dying all over America with this opioid epidemic, you know, doctors prescribing, the hospitals, you know, dropping patients out of their doors, you know, hooked on their medications, and people are dying all over the place from this.
Yeah, I was hanging out in New Smyrna this weekend or last weekend for my birthday, et cetera. But there was, I won't put her name out there, but there was a young warrior lady hanging out with us at the beach crib. And she was, let's just say she'd been on the other side of the opiate addiction, on the dark side of life, if you will, and had crossed over and seen some things and never went to a rehab or did any of that. And gives it all up, if you will, to, she's like, marijuana, it pulled me off of everything. And she was down in, you know, the hardest places you can be on some synthetics. And she found her way out and clawed out using marijuana, and to this day was talking about it next to us about how, hey, it saved my life.
It's, you know, it's marijuana is a point of human insanity. It's a, you know, war on drugs. And all the people that have locked up for marijuana, this is one of the basic forms of terrorism in the world. The drug warriors are terrorists, and they go to war against the domestic populations. It happens. It's also a war against God, because marijuana comes from God, comes from nature. It's something that's good. And sure, you can breathe too much. You can smoke too much marijuana. I mean, you can do too much of anything. Can have too much sex, you can have, but it's good stuff, and it actually is the best. It's just such, if you grow it yourself, it's for free, it's safe. It's in terms of medicine, it's hard. Of course, magnesium, bicarbonate. My next book after the bicarbonate book was iodine. Before I wrote about marijuana, is iodine, and I'm rewriting that book now because my New York publisher wants to publish it. And even myself, who've been, you know, I wrote a book about it, rewriting the book just is making iodine more and more and more important.
Please educate me, sir. Iodine influence, class number 3 in session. Proceed.
Well, it's a nasty subject because it brings in what nobody likes to talk about. Fukushima. Forget about the old, you know, the atomic tests and other accidents. Fukushima, when it blew up, put out incredible amounts of iodine into the world. And it's not just the iodine that disappears or a half-life of 8 days. There's also a lot of it takes about 15 million years to disappear. So we have a lot of radioactive iodine running around in the ground, gets into the milk, and you know, it's such a bad problem that it's against the law to talk about it in Japan, and you'd never read about it in United States mainstream news.
It's against the law to talk about it?
Huh? In Japan, it's against the law.
Holy shit.
It's against the law. It's against the law to publish about it.
I didn't know that.
They literally passed the law. You know, we're on a basically path towards extermination with nuclear energy. Talk about it. But iodine, if you don't have enough iodine, it's like, you know, the thyroid. When you don't have enough thyroid iodine, you get goiter. The thyroid starts expanding. It's desperate to find anything that looks like iodine so you can put it into the thyroid. And bromide, which is a lot of medicines, is a halogen, just like fluoride water is a halogen. If you don't have iodine, it'll take the fluoride. And if your thyroid is desperate and just any radioactive kind comes by, it'll grab it. So you know, taking a lot of iodine is protective against radioactive iodine. Now, of course, in this crazy world of ours, doctors use radioactive iodine as a treatment. It doesn't make any sense. Iodine, every cell in the body needs it. Iodine, the thyroid health, protection against thyroid cancer. Iodine protection and treatment of breast cancer, ovaries, prostate, all these glands are like the thyroid. They concentrate iodine. So if you don't have enough, they're vulnerable. When a breast cancer, you can paint the breast with iodine to treat them, and it goes right into the skin.
And then
on top of everything else, in a world that's going down because of antibiotic-resistant infections, we already have the answer, iodine. You cannot become resistant to iodine. It doesn't work that way. So iodine is maybe 50% of our immune response. So if you're weak in iodine, you're weak in your immune system. So iodine is really important.
I love it. You drop some bombs and then, oh yeah, it's important. Can you take too much iodine? Can you hurt yourself with it?
You could drink a whole bottle of it, maybe 3-4 bottles of it. You know, you can drown yourself in a cup of water. Yeah. Some people are very sensitive to iodine because their thyroid is gone. They've been removed by surgery, or the hypothyroid or hypothyroid. You know, they're already messed up. So taking it can be, sensitive person needs to start with very little and slowly. But if you're dying from cancer, or you have syphilis, and we were 100 years ago, they would give obscene, 100 years ago, that you go into the pharmacy, and what would they have? They had iodine and medical marijuana. They would give a gram, if it had syphilis, they'd give a gram of iodine. It wouldn't kill the person, but it had a chance of killing the syphilis.
So can blood tests be used to measure iodine levels? How does someone test iodine levels?
I never did, but one of my friends, Dr. David Brownstein, he tested 5,000 of his patients in Detroit, and 96% were deficient in iodine. He's also written a book about iodine.
Man, so just on this one little interview alone is the idea of magnesium, the idea of baking soda, and now iodine. What else are we missing, Doc? What's the next 7 books on? What's the next obvious that no one's paying attention to and medical systems are ignoring?
Let me get my list right in front of my face so I can be able to.
Let me pull out my list of 400 books. I can't quite remember. God, writing my one book was a lobotomy for me, man. You've written, how many books have you written?
I think the list now is 23.
This is 23. That'd be 23 lobotomies, man. I'm done, man. I'd be mentally.
One of them, my cancer compendium, is 2,500 pages long. So that's like 5 books.
yeah, that counts exactly. 2,500. How long did it take you to write that?
I don't even remember. I don't know. This is my insane days. Now I'm much slower.
Got the magnesium levels right. You're hanging out in the utopia in Brazil. I'm not writing dictionaries anymore.
But to answer your question, one of the next books was about selenium. And I concentrated on the work of this brilliant physician from New York City. He's now dead. And he used to inject selenium to treat cancer. And it was a special kind of selenium that's bonded to a lipid, to a fat. And the product that I promote is the only one in the world like it. It's each drop is a milligram, which is 5 to 20 times more than any other product. And the first time I took it, I took 26 drops, which was like 200 times more than a regular dose. And I didn't feel a thing. It's very safe. And you can use high dosages. And selenium is a very mysterious mineral that people are very afraid of because the types that are normally used, if you take the kind of dosages I take with mine, you know, could have problems. Well, at least so they say. You know, it's supposedly very dangerous. Selenium, very toxic.
Yeah, I'm novice.
And yet, if you look on the internet, you can't find anybody who's died from it. But we know that 20,000 people a year in America die from all the different forms of aspirin. So it's kind of a distorted story. Selenium, just a little bit, goes a long way for the one's immune system, for treating cancer. It's a, just one of these.
Well, it's hard-pressed to see that, to not believe that there's so many different minerals and then combination of those minerals of other ways to treat these harsh killers like cancer, breast cancer that you're talking about, that chemotherapy just, it seems so toxic in itself, you know, to treat something like that rather than using some naturally existing remedies or maybe even healers or cures.
Yeah, I just had a whole thing with my family. My sister has had cancer, and they didn't want to talk to me at all about anything except the mainstream approach. And I didn't even want to tell you the story, but because it was very painful, they did the chemo. They said that the chemo kicked out about 50% of the cancer, which was in her lungs and in her back and stuff like that, but not in her brain. And then the brilliant physician said, okay, we're going to start radiation and we're going to radiate your brain first. Why? Because, even though there's no cancer there, we would think it would go there. So let's treat it. They gave switched doctors and did another test and found out that while she was having a radiation, she actually didn't have cancer anymore, that the chemo had killed the cancer. So supposedly she now radiated with heavy doses of radiation, but free of cancer. So what's going to happen to her, I don't know. But her prime cancer was wiped out, according to the second doctor. So chemotherapy sometimes does work, but usually afterwards you're facing, or radiation, you're facing the after effects, which can bring another cancer. So I'm not really into.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, I can't say I am. I'm sorry to hear about just going through that and probably feeling like you could offer a lot of help at the same time, because that's what you're doing with your 23 books and bringing out these holistic chances, or at least I see them as chances, as hope for people, right? Because sitting in that place where you feel like it's inevitably over or 50-50 over, you know, you're reaching for every percentage. And these seem like to be applications that you don't need to be insured for, if you will, right? You don't have to spend $100,000 for the next year trying to cure yourself.
Right. It's, you know, if you get all the bells and whistles in my protocol, it's still much less expensive than mainstream treatment. Much less.
And I think we see more and more of that. I mean, whether the rise is due to implications of all of the epigenetic effects, from our food to the air we breathe to the lack of sunlight to acidic levels in our body to lack of activity, who knows all of the reasons. But there's certainly a lot more cancer popping up and a lot more prolonged treatments as opposed to cures after all these years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, you know, there's more things to the list. You know, I basically segment my protocol. I'm going to be publishing this maybe tomorrow. I have this new page I've developed. And I clearly show the protocol on three levels. The first level is what we've been talking about, the different substances, which we would add to the list. We would add potassium. We would add, let me see, where are we? Oxygen, I have this equipment, which we're going to talk about on the second level, the different medical equipment. Where's my page? Lost again.
And you're walking through the naturalistic approach, if you will, to cancer?
Yeah, just hold on one second. Okay. So to the list that we didn't talk about, we would add potassium. We would add marijuana, we talked about oxygen, pumping in much more high levels of oxygen, glutathione, suppositories, vitamin C instead of injections, take it more orally. Vitamin D, of course, is very important. Most people, and when we talk about vitamin D, we're talking about the sun. You know, people who don't get sun, they don't get vitamin D. You know, sun gives us life. It's not like the doctors who want us to be afraid of it. Things like sulfur. And then we get into nutrition. But on the second level, so this is all the first level, all the medicinals. On the second level is medical equipment. And I have a list. I have these 10 different items, different medical equipment that just my side and then my how to set up a clinic to treat cancer and other serious diseases. And it's something we have to do anyway, because even if you go to a clinic for treatment or a doctor or whatever, you still have to treat before you go and when you get home. It's not like you don't get cured from disease, chronic disease in a week or a month. It's why we call it chronic. So it's something we've got to constantly treat. And I have these list of this equipment from a biomat, these far infrared mattresses, which is the best thing in the best medical equipment in the world.
What's the page? What's the site or address so people can go to it?
Well, I'm going to give you, it's going to be published tomorrow, and it's not optimized yet for cell phone until tomorrow, but I'll give you the link.
Is it on your website at drcircus.com?
It's there. It's there.
Yeah, so that's drcircus.com.
Here's a link to this new page, which shows the three levels of the, it's called Learning and Practicing Intensive Healthcare.
Yeah. So, all right. Yeah. I put the link up. I'll post that on our live post of this show here, and I'll include that in your website and everything else in the actual podcast post when we put that up.
So this biomat is like the best thing in the world. The only difficulty is you have to pay for it. You have to buy it. Once you buy it, you just put it on your bed and you turn it on at night or in the afternoon if you want to use it. And you let it warm up a little bit and you jump on it. It's like jumping into heaven or into your lover's arms. It's warm. It's radiating light. Infrared light penetrates the body inside the body. Pain, if you're having a flu, where is the best place to go? On a biomat. It gives you comfort. Takes away pain, increases blood circulation, and many other things. So using a biomat, I tell people I'm going to die on mine, because if you're dying, where are you going to be? You're not going to be in bed, and you want to be calm.
Yeah, I definitely want to get a bio bed for sure, but you're breaking up a little. You're breaking up for sure, Doc. You're getting all Optimus Prime Transformer.
Other thing I'd be waiting. How about now?
Better? There you go. There you go. Now you're back. You were going off about the biomat that I now must get.
Oh, yeah. That's just – and if you live in a cold environment or you don't want to spend a fortune heating the house, turn the heat off if you're in the – and you're just sleeping on a biomat and you're heating yourself. It's wonderful. What I've developed is multitasking medicine using these equipment. Every morning, I wake up, usually between 5 and 6 o'clock in the morning. My biomat's still on from the night before. I turn it on high. Then I stick these two little things in my nose, cell phone size. And it radiates infrared light into my nose. And at night, it looks like Santa Claus. Your whole nose, everything's red. And what you're doing is you're radiating the blood, thin capillaries. You're radiating the blood with laser light, red light. And you're giving a deep blood treatment. Instead of going to a hospital and having the blood taken out of you with surgery, and then they treat it, and then they put it back in. So I'm sitting there, and I'm on my biomat, radiating, treating my blood, And then I stick this device, a 50-buck device, 50 bucks. It doesn't have water in it now, but there's usually water in the bottom. You breathe and you blow bubbles. And what this does is it slows your breathing down. So I'm sitting on the biomat, two things in my nose, breathing slowly for 20 minutes. And then I have this chiropractic percussor. It's a massage machine. I hold it in my hand. It has a piston and it's thumping on you. So I'm sitting there giving my massage, breathing, nose radiating with the, and on my biomat, four treatments at the same time. It's good medicine, not that expensive, and very deep. It's something you can do every day, day after day, month after month, year after year, to either be healthy, breathing slowly gives you a handle on your stress, on your parasympathetic nervous system. The faster you breathe, the sooner you die. The faster you breathe, the less oxygen you get. The faster you breathe, the more anxious you are. Breathing, there's nothing. We're talking about magnesium, bicarbonate, and iodine. But nothing is more important than your next breath. Because if you don't take it, you're dead in 2 minutes, 3 minutes, maximum 5 minutes. Dead. That's how important the next breath is. So how you breathe, you would anticipate that it's going to have a big effect on physiology. And it does. When I started using this machine 4 years ago, I was breathing at 12 breaths a minute. And my wife, who's a yoga teacher, thought I was breathing too heavy and too fast. This for 20 minutes, I'm breathing at 3 breaths a minute for 20 minutes. It's a big difference.
Yeah, for me, that's logically, that computes logically for me, and a beautiful place to end the podcast, my friend. I thought we may even edit it to where you say, if you don't have your next breath, you die. The breathing stuff is starting to come out too, on its influence and impact on us, like you said, from mentally. And, you know, if you think about it, if you're in that raised state of breathing, right? How many miles are you putting on the heart? How many miles, right? How many beats is worth every breath? But so the 3 a minute, I think I'm going to start trying to aim for that. But that's going to be hard to do with the Cognitive Rampage podcast, man. I'm supposed to be right just going off at 3 breaths a minute.
But life is cool in the slow lane. It's just before we go, just because you were talking about the heart, I have a machine, one of my machines comes from Russia, comes from the same people who make this thing. It's something you put on your wrist. It's a computer thing and device. Mm-hmm. And it, for 5 minutes, it measures every heartbeat. It measures what they call heart rate variability. Most of us grew up thinking that, you know, if you have your heart's beating 70 times a minute, it's 70 equal beats. It's not. If your heart is beating 70 times equally, same beat, you're just about dead. The heart is supposed to be flexible. The heart is supposed to respond in a millisecond. If you're being frightened or if you take a step up a stairs, your heart changes. And it does that every beat, beat by beat by beat. And this machine measures the variation. And the more variation, the more health.
No shit.
So this, yeah, no shit. This task gives you a number for your stress. It gives you a number for your health level. It gives you a number for your aging.
Interesting. A way to measure stress on
diagnosis of every organ. It gives you your meridians. It gives you an Indian Ayurvedic diagnosis. It just gives you everything from the heartbeat.
Amazing. Almost a step toward measuring stress, possibly. That's pretty cool, man.
It measures stress and nails it right on. It goes from a 0 to 1,000 scale. And I've been above the scale. I once hit 2,000, and it'll adjust. It'll go up. But
well, it gives you a number. I will send them to the website. So it'll be posted tomorrow, everybody, at drcircus.com, S-I-R-C-U-S.com, right?
Right.
Beautiful. So when the 24th book comes out, would you like to come back on and talk about that one? And then maybe we'll learn about your fourth, fifth, and sixth book as well?
Sure. Sure.
I think we'll just catch up with you once a month or once every other month or something just to see what else you can bring.
Okay.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on the show.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
I look forward to chatting next time and learning how else I can save my own ass, if you will. I appreciate that.
Okay. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Man. Every time I learn something like that, I'm always going, all right, what am I not doing? What am I not doing to myself? What should I be supplementing, right? And then probably if I had his beat variable measure, I'd learn how stressed out I was. There's just so much, I think, that we can do naturally. And for me, I love to see when people follow their passions, no matter where they have to do it at, and continue to press forward. I think perhaps we count out Mother Nature too fast and rely on self too much when we start thinking about some synthetic drug or treatment that we'll make that will fix everything and make it go away. But I think a lot of practitioners would agree that there's no free lunch, that a lot of synthetic meds and treatments that we use come with a price. And at least naturally and holistically, it seems like there may just be a free lunch. You know, I couldn't see any reason of not at least checking those levels and taking those supplements consistently as opposed to just when something bad happens. I think he even mentioned that when he's on the podcast. But I think all of us have been affected somehow in our lives by somebody with cancer or that has experienced it, maybe even yourself. And when you look at that light yourself or that path you have to walk, I think it's wild how much programming comes right into play for so many people that when the sickness happens, how fast we run to the medical, how fast we say, nope, we're doing it this way. It's all fun and games, right? Until it happens to you. And I don't know, it's scary how programmed we are that the magic pill or the medical office down the street is going to be it or has to be it or is the only way out. And maybe not the fact that maybe nature had given us the way to heal ourselves and help each other along the same way. And, you know, we have to remember that medical practice is theoretical practice. And a lot of times they're guessing. And maybe it just feels better that we think that because it's medical that they have the answer or they have the best answer. And maybe we block out the idea that corruption or big business or whatever it may be and lobbyists don't actually have a real effect onto the field of helping and healing people. That's a hard thing to accept sometimes. And you got to be careful. You got to be careful about what's out there and what people are practicing. And especially if they're handing you pills and pushing you right to the theoretic synthetic that I think maybe we can learn to practice daily more in the holistic to be a little more prophetic. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you live in your cognitive rampage. Love you.